we are going to start our meeting, and welcome to this meeting. So we look forward and we interact with you to understand what is going on and what are you going to present to us on your annual performance plan and your plan for the year. I'm Ellen Flynn. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee of Communications in Public Enterprise. And I'm going to hand over to the honourable members to introduce themselves, and thereafter everyone in the room will introduce themselves. Yeah. Over to you.
Camille Lambdon, is a member of the committee.
Dumela Maurice, on a Kibiba ou les filles, ça va. Et donc, voilà pour nous.
Good morning, everyone. Jacques Julius, how are you? Member of the committee.
Salvanan, I'm going to go to the committee. I'm a member of the committee.
Anyone else in the room can introduce me. And so I also welcome Honorable Mr. Sulama. You can introduce yourself so that we can know you in the room. Thank you. You can go.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lulama Mvini, that's an ordinary citizen.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bengi. I'm from PNG.
Thank you very much. And a very special warrior comes to apologies. This is an apology and almost a standing apology for the manager. But I hope you're going to communicate with your best friend. You see the standing apology. I don't know whether it is just possible or not. Why are you waving out with him? I mean, I'd really love to see you at least once a year or sometime ahead of time to come in with a prayer. Thank you very much. Any other questions? And I think I'm going to hand over to you for the presentation. I don't know, DG, whether you want to say something before you go in to do the presentation. I obviously want to say something before we start the presentation. I hope that you will have time to express an explanation on what happened during the weekend with the CMA. I think you owe me to us to explain to us so that we all in this community can understand what we are. Over to you to the presentation. Whether you will do it now or after the presentation, keep on the floor. I think I will over you.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for giving us the opportunity to come and present a strategic plan and annual performance plan of the department. Chairperson, I will give an outline in terms of incidents that happened over the weekend, but if Chairperson so allows us to go through the presentation just so that we don't disturb the flow, and then in the end, then I come in and give that explanation. I would love Trina to take us through the presentation of the document, and I will come in to give clarity on certain things that probably do require clarity. Trina, that was your time.
Thanks, Vichy, and good morning again to the honorable members. Just to look at the presentation outline, I'm just going to focus on the purpose of the presentation, the strategic context within which the department will be operating in the current financial year, as well as looking over the MTMF period as well. We'll look at the strategic objectives of the department and the outcomes that we'll be pursuing within the MTMF period. And then we will outline the priorities for the department for the current financial year and look at the resourcing and the strategy roadmap. In terms of the purpose of the presentation, the focus is really to outline the strategy context within which we'll be implementing both the strategic plan as well as the performance plan of the department, and highlight the changes that we've introduced into the lens that we're presenting today, and also focus on the strategic outcomes, the objectives, as well as the priorities for the current financial year. In terms of the strategic context, obviously the department is operating within the economic sector, and I think this point has been significantly highlighted before, as well in our in the budget vote that was presented by the Minister last week, that the global economy is facing significant challenges, and these challenges are also having a negative impact on the performance of the South African economy. But what is more concerning on our side is that the global performance also exposing some of the weaknesses in structure and the performance of the South African economy. And one critical area that we've identified is that there is still a greater dependency on the commodities, and South Africa largely remain an extractive economy. and as a result, it will always be vulnerable to changes in the commodity prices, which are highly volatile. And it's one of the areas that we believe that going forward, we really need to focus on to transform the economy. And also the second part is the level of conservation in the economy that undermines new entrants. I think one significant thing is that the companies that are listed in the stock exchange are really controlling how the South African economy performs. And that undermines the entrance of new participants, in particular small business, that are critical for driving growth as well as employment. And also the third part that we're looking at is that our infrastructure networks are really geared towards supporting the movement of unprocessed commodities. And once you have that slump in the production of commodities, some of our companies that are dependent in the mining sector, they find themselves being exposed and facing serious challenges. And also, I think the one other part that is very concerning for us is that we continue to see limited participation by the greater part of the society. And this limits the cycle whereby we can have more people participating in the economy and be able to accelerate the long-term economic growth for the South African economy. On the investment side, we all know that Eskom and Transnet have been playing a critical part to facilitate the movement of the economy from being consumption-driven to investment-driven economy. And we've seen some improvement in the investment as a percentage of GDP. However, what is concerning is that the productive sectors such as manufacturing as well as mining are beginning to experience significant challenges, and most of the private enterprises in those sectors, they halted their investment plans. This is a concern for us because it also means that if the companies are not investing in their productive capacity, it means that economic growth in the medium to long term will remain low. And as we know that the National Development Plan targets to have an investment ratio of about 30% of GDP. And the current number shows that the investments in the economy are around about 20%. So it's one of the things that we need to ensure that the government intervenes and we put in place interventions that will be able to then not only unlock the public sector investment, but also facilitate the investment by the private sector. Just looking at a 10-year view on investment in the economy, I think what is very clear is that there has been a significant shift from the public sector side. Like, for instance, in 2005, the government as well as the public corporation were investing around about 80 billion per annum on infrastructure. But last year, we saw that amount jumping to 261 billion. And it's largely driven by state-owned enterprises, in particular Eskom as well as Transnet. And this investment has been critical to unlock other investments within the private sector, particularly when you look at investment into coal mining. Eskom has played a significant role to unlock some of the projects within the mining sector. However, what is more concerning is that the private sector investment has continued to decline, and in 2015 it fell below the 400 billion rand level that is very critical for us to continue to sustain high level of investment in the South African economy. And that the investment by manufacturing remains weak. And for us, we really believe that if we are to change the story around the South African growth, we need to make sure that we really begin to address some of the challenges that are faced by the manufacturing sector, and we begin to unlock more investment into this particular sector, given its impact in terms of creating employment that we desperately need in the South African environment. On the special economy, I think what is very clear is that the special dynamics have not changed. There are three provinces that are significant contributing to the South African economy, Gauteng, KZN, and to some extent the Western Cape. The other provinces such as the Northern Cape, Free State, remain marginalized, and for us it is important that we then support the provinces for them to be able to participate in the South African economy and make sure that we leverage the capacity that exists within our state-owned enterprises to integrate these provinces in the value chains of our SOC to begin to unlock new industries as well as new opportunities for the people residing within these areas to be able to participate in the South African economy and really extend the benefits of our democracy. And we are very clear on our side that we really need to make sure that the distribution has changed and then significant support to then attended the provinces that continue to struggle. In terms of GDP growth by provinces, and what is also clear is that the mining sector has the decline or the slump in mining sector has had profound impact in the provinces. And when you look at the Northwest, it was the only province that experienced a decline in its economic activities in 2014. However, you would realize that with the Northern Cape, although the economy there is still dependent in the production of iron ore, but the economy there has been able to survive the slump in the price of iron ore and iron ore production, largely as a result of the renewable independent power producer program that was implemented by the government that has really unlocked opportunities within the Northern Cape, but also some of the science and technology projects that was implemented by the government, such as the SKA as well as the MIAFED projects that are really now positioning the province as a space, playing an active role in the space industry. So I think we can see from this performance that the state has a bigger role in terms of changing the growth dynamics as well as making sure that we provide opportunities for the provinces that are significantly challenged in terms of investment as well in terms of economic activities. However, I think what is concerning, for instance, when you look at provinces like Limpopo, they are having the largest reserves in terms of the platinum and the PGM group, but because of the slump in the prices, some of the projects that we had to take off within these provinces had to be delayed. So we need to make sure that as a state to provide additional support investment to support those initiatives that can change the growth story in those particular provinces. And just to conclude on the economic context, Chairperson, we are very clear that implementation of government plans will be more challenging given the economic context, and that we need to make sure that SOC really invest more optimally and that their investment really support the diversification of the South African economy and really encourage the recovery of the economy and that to begin to explore new opportunities, not only within the established industrial areas, but also making sure that we encourage participation of other provinces that would really require support from the state. And also, we're very clear that there must be greater coherence in the different spheres of government. And every department were implementing programs that will really facilitate the cooperation between national and provincial as well as local government departments. And we really want to deploy the assets that have been given to us trainings to make sure that we really leverage them to change the growth story in a number of regional economies. And what has changed, the question, we've introduced a number of changes in our plans. I think one critical one is that we're going to be emphasizing more on supporting the reindustrialization of the South African economy. And also, the second part is really making sure that TPE does not only focus on just managing the state-owned enterprises, but they also focus on the strategic partnership that we can explore with provinces and other spheres of government. And that we need to also ensure that the joint planning and execution of projects between the department and the state-owned enterprises is encouraged. And also we're going to see the department being very active in terms of engaging society to make sure that we make the state-owned enterprises as well as the department more accountable to the public as part of building the confidence in the state in general, as well as the institutions that are managed by the state. And also we are pursuing fewer high-impact projects. And we are focusing our efforts on projects that can be able to transform the economy and give us the critical mass that we require to really have an impact on addressing the simple challenges that are outlined in the ATSF as well as the National Development Plan. And also we'll be looking at building capacity for other spheres of government, in particular when you look at municipalities that are challenged around the issues of billing around electricity. This is about strategic outcomes. Chairperson, you are focusing much on only three outcomes. We have the core outcomes that really look at focusing on making sure that our state-owned enterprises are sustainable and they are able to deliver on their mandate. And the second part of our outcomes is to make sure that the institutional framework within each the state-owned enterprises operate is conducive for them to be able to diligently deliver on their mandate and also to effect transformation that we require in the South African economy. And the last part is really making sure that we support the implementation of the government's economic strategies and that we make sure that we really support the re-acceleration of the South African economy, support skills development that are required for the transformation of the economy, but also begin to encourage the new entrants through our enterprise development initiatives, as well as making sure that we form partnership with other government arms to make sure that enterprise development as well as entrepreneurship is encouraged within the South African economy. The strategic objectives of the department, we have about nine strategic objectives, and these objectives are directly linked to the outcomes that we want to achieve. And on our side, we're very clear that we need to make sure that state-owned enterprises are financially sustainable in order to make sure that we protect the interest, but also more importantly is that we don't unnecessarily increase the cost of doing business in the South African environment. And the last, the other critical part is really making sure that they really execute diligently on their mandate and that the public in general have confidence that state-owned enterprises will deliver the services that they are mandated to deliver. I think the critical success around ESCOM really shows that government has the capacity to turn around state-owned enterprises and to make sure that they place them on the path that they will be contributing positively to the South African economy. Yeah, I've already spoken around the liberalization of the economy. I think what's more critical there, Chairperson, is that we will be really looking at leveraging the deployment in our infrastructure investment program to support the development of capabilities in our manufacturing sector, as well as making sure that we limit the import leakage and making sure that we really localize the expenditure on our bill program. Further is that we'll also be looking at opportunities within the aerospace industries to make sure that we encourage the development of advanced manufacturing in the South African economy. In terms of the priorities of the department, in 2016-17, we'll really be focusing on finalization of the state-owned company shareholder policy concept paper. This will really focus on how we will be leveraging the investment that the state has undertaken in the enterprises to support the execution of our development policies and strategies. The second part will be looking at exploring funding options for the state-owned enterprises, given that we all know that the fiscal will not be able to support them to execute some of the plans. So we'll be looking at other options that we can leverage to allow the state-owned enterprises to continue with their investments that are required for the turnaround of the South African economy. We'll also be implementing the intergovernmental relations program and also as forming strategic partnership with provincial economic development departments. And I think this will be much more relevant for this committee because the focus of the program is really to make sure that we begin to build capacity within our provinces. We support our provinces to execute their provincial economic and development strategies, and that there is alignment between the plans that the SOC are executing at the provincial level and municipal level, and whether the strategies that are prioritized by the provincial governments. will also be supporting the implementation of the Black Innocence Program that was announced by the government last year. I think what's very clear is that we really need to de-racialize the South African economy, and we need to see more black participation in the key sectors of the economy. We'll also be optimizing our state-owned company skill development program, focus on scarce and critical skills. Most of our enterprises have committed a significant fund to really support the development of skills that are required by the economy. We've seen also different partners from a strategic partnership with other government departments, such as Department of Higher Education, to really provide the funding to optimize the facilities of our state-owned enterprises so that they can be able to train more people. And also, we will be working towards strengthening the financial position of our state-owned enterprises, both implementation of programs that would really restructure their costs, as well as making sure that we improve the efficiencies that we've seen over the past 12 months. We'll also be positioning the state-owned enterprises to be able to pursue our African market. The minister was very clear in the budget vote speech that we cannot be able to separate the development of South Africa from the end of the region. So we need to ensure that we position our state-owned enterprises in a way that we can begin to facilitate regional integration and promote the trade within the SADC and the African region. In terms of the resourcing of the department, we know that the Treasury was doing some cost-cutting, and that also affected the budget of the department. Already for the current NTF period, and the budget of the department, in particular, the compensation of employees' part has been cut by 25 million. This would mean that securing or filling some of the position will be quite challenging, because we will have to do that with lesser resources. But obviously, there are other alternative delivery mechanisms that we can explore that will ensure that we enhance the capacity of the department going forward. In terms of the strategy roadmap, I think what is critical on our side is to make sure that we continue with the stabilization of our state-owned enterprises and making sure that they contribute to economic development. And that is what we're focusing on over the next 12 months. In 12 to 36 months, it's really about continuing the repositioning of the DPE as the new leadership of the DG, and making sure that we position our SC to facilitate the turnaround of the South African economy, and making sure that we deliver the projects that are critical for the transformation of the economy, and also that are critical for our growth in medium to long term. And over the entire period, we really want to see DPE being an organization that is completely transformed, that promotes excellence, that is really the custodian of the South African economy, and really drives the transformation of the economy, as well as making sure that state-owned enterprises, as key agents of growth and development, they really contribute to the pathway we can be able to deal with our challenges of unemployment and poverty, as well as inequality. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
Yes, dear President, I just a few points that I think require a bit of emphasis.
Because in my mind was a concern about the measurement of what understanding that you are an oversight body over the entity. Therefore, I was requested the book to see on the things that you are saying. Therefore, I'm going to. But just explain your role so that all of our members can understand why they are measurable target against what you presenting here. You know, the achievements and the targets, so that we can measure things. Because for me, what it was difficult, and then afterwards, I realized that your role, the department's role for the agency, so what is it?
Well, that person, rightfully so. If that slide that talks about priorities, the first bullet, we're talking about the finalization of a shareholder policy contract. Our role is we are a shareholder, meaning the state-owned companies are owned by government. That is known. and there are departments which are called policy departments. For instance, the Department of Transport. It is a policy department that manages the policy environment of the transport sector. Now, the company that resides under transport will be Transnet, will be SAA, will be SA Express. There has been a realization that in other instances, because the policy department develops policy, but also it plays a regulatory role because of the fact that there will be other players in the market. It becomes also very difficult now for them to become a free and a player by keeping a company in-house. And this company has to compete with other companies in an open market. Now, for it to be able to operate in a business environment like other companies, it has to come out of the market, so that now the market can exercise the regulatory function on it without bias. That's when now the Department of Public Enterprises plays that role of becoming a shareholder representative of government. Because government owns these companies wholly, 100%. So our role, we are a shareholder, meaning we ensure that now the strategic business management of these particular companies is driven by us. We, through the appointments of the boards that are now the governing bodies on behalf of government, and the CEOs and the CFOs. And that, what is applicable to them largely is the Company Act, because they have to operate in a market economy environment. So we ensure that they adhere to all these particular obligatory safeguards. Second to that, I'm talking largely broad principles. We ensure that we interact with the funding environment, because they don't necessarily also secure funding locally. They also, from time to time, look at a competitive financial environment, be it in China, be it World Bank, be it wherever, where they can get the best financing packages. Then we facilitate that entire process through a PFMA process. So that's also our role. Now the third role, broadly also, through the shareholder compact. A shareholder compact is an administrative arrangement that the minister has to hold the board and the chairperson of the board accountable by ensuring that a set of targets are agreed and there are performance measures between the minister as a shareholder and the board. And from time to time also, we run a process of evaluating the board's performance on those basis. That's when then she would then apply discretionary powers to keep the board or to disband the board if the board does not meet its own target as agreed. So I think those are the larger, broader principles that give clarity of our role as a shareholder department. But also, we facilitate with other departments outside, an example, in an energy environment. There's many stakeholders where it's placed. So there would be environmental issues that affect ESCO. Let's say, for instance, the COP agreement has got about a bearing of about 200 billion to ESCO. Am I correct, Makula? Yeah. Now, of course, the environment will just look at signing the COP21 declaration. But unfortunately, that has got a bearing in financial terms to ESCO. For Eskom to change its operational system, the fumes that comes out of the power station to lessen the emissions and all that. The cost of putting all that infrastructure, 200 billion, and 200 billion is the cost of building two power stations, new power stations. So you have to play that role of saying, instead of us taking this money, to adhere to environmental obligation as you sign, and on the other side we've got an energy deficit. How else do we really make sure that, and generally this is borrowed money. So those are the dynamics. We play that role of interfacing to protect the company against other policy environments to show that they are continuously sustainable. I'm citing that as one of the examples. So I think I've dealt with one issue that I needed to deal with in terms of clarification of our role. I've talked also to funding options. I wanted to cite this example also around Transnet. Transnet are different to other companies because of its huge asset base. It is able to borrow against its own balance sheet without necessarily getting state guarantees. And that's the area where we say that is a yardstick where in the future we would want other companies to be at. And that is quite important because if you listen to the treasury discussion around private sector participation, they are talking about the exposure against the fishers. So we make sure that in the manner in which we guide them in their strategic maneuvers, that constantly as they go forward, they are growth. And I'll cite an example with Eskom. Eskom might be utilizing debt now to build power station. And you see, to build power station, the minute it's completed and operational, it increases the asset base of Eskom. So their balance sheet strengthens from that point of view. And that's why it is quite important for us not to slow down in investing in a build program. Particularly because there is actually a situation where we begin to realize that there is greater interest in investing in the energy sector. Not necessarily by private sector, as it is normally reported, but it is an interest by other countries. Let me put it that way. But you know, countries, when they come to invest in another country, they don't come as a country. They come to their companies. So they will give their companies grants. They give them grants to say, go into South Africa, secure stakes in the existing power utilities. The minute you've got the stakes, you are going to continue to grow your control and influence. And you know where the target is. The target is because Eskom has already opened up an avenue to export electricity to our neighboring countries. And in modern day economy, energy is a very important catalyst, or let me say a leverage in political terms. A leverage that is used to play a competitive game of the world economies, particularly because it is a game of manufacturing and distribution of goods and services. So China is a key player. They've assumed a strategy to move out of China. I mean, we know for the last 2-3 years, they call it a Silk Road strategy. Broad in depth is that they've come to realize that actually by confining manufacturing in China, it's creating receiver problems for them because they don't have much land, much resources. So I think their new strategy now is to move closer to areas of resources. Now if you look at the world, Africa and South America generally become attractive areas for such investment. And a key catalyst for manufacturing is energy and water. But now energy is far much more key than water because of the cost of both skill, capital, and all that put it together. Now also the safety in Africa. It's better to build the power station in South Africa than in other parts of Africa for safety reasons because of the cost of building a power station. So, and that exports a line to supply distribution. So reality is, if we have to ensure that we grow Eskom to a level where it continues to export electricity, it gives us leverage to be able to industrialize. And I think that is a very important aspect. And I think sometimes we are too harsh on ourselves and on our companies. to beat them up very harshly, that the reality of the matter is that in a world economy setting, much as we want foreign direct investment, it always comes at price. And the price of leverage and control. And the control, it means that how far the commitments you are putting yourself into will enable you now to implement your other plans. I think that's also very good. The derivative, let me not be ignored. What we normally make as a mistake is that we are singular focused on one item and we beat it up without necessarily looking at the connecting points around it. To say you will never achieve leg industrially unless you invest in energy. Because for anybody to come and set up a refinery, steel refinery for instance, because you already have iron ore, it needs huge electricity to run it. Probably even a dedicated power station. Now, unless you address one, you will not have two. So, and what's said is that such a discussion, you never get it in newspapers, you never get it in an open discussion. You only get a concentrated discussion that talks about this failure without necessarily realizing that the dynamics that are there. Let me cite another example. It's a situation where you would have a company given a tender. Is it time?
I'll try to ask.
Okay. On that, okay.
I know you're very patient about what
I agree, Chairperson. But this point that I wanted to highlight is that certain things, when certain difficulties happen, you must always understand it ethically. I'll cite an example. The key players in the energy sector is largely, I think, the Chinese, the Americans, and French. And you find that in some instances you are awarded to this direction, and then on the other hand side there's a complaint and the court comes in and there's a delay for 2 years to implement because this thing is now started in the court. At the same time, you have lost time in terms of implementation. And the minute you lose time, it means then that there's other complaints that comes in on the other side to say you are not moving. I'm just showing that bigger picture to say the game of the economy is far broader and more sophisticated than it looks at face value. And I think when one is in the committee, it's only proper because you see it in the newspapers. And it informs your thoughts about us. And it's proper for us when we engage with yourself like this that we paint a broader picture that more or less clarifies everything. Chairperson, I think one other issue I wanted to elaborate is that issue that says our economy is concentrated in three pockets and only state-owned companies can change that. I think that is a very important point to make. Why we say so? We interacted with Chinese through an umbrella body that looks like ourselves, called SASEX. They are under their arm, they've got around 900 plus state-owned companies. And they are saying they are keeping their state-owned companies as they are, broad, and they are growing them because they can go to areas where private sectors cannot go. And so it means for change to happen in rural areas, it's only state-owned companies that can go there. No private sector will ever go there. So with us wanting to defeat our state-owned companies and cut them in chunks, we must then assume that we are deliberately saying we want to keep the economy as is. Because the other parts of the economy that are underdeveloped will never develop because of the risk of investment that private sector will never take in such areas. So in the future plans, I'll cite an example through Pakistan, where there's a possibility of our building a harbor in Kotnolo. Then our engagement through our intergovernmental relations program, we started with India Robert, where we work together with premiers, with director generals, and economic departments of provinces and municipalities to say, before you can build a much as that build program might happen in 5 years' time, we must begin to say to the province, prioritize skills development so that we don't have a situation where we import welders, people who work on the pipes and from other countries. young people, we must set up an academy through Transnet. So those are the type of projects we are refocusing our CSI so that it deals with issues of youth unemployment, women empowerment, skills development in areas that are not economically active. So I think that's the future, and that's what we want to. So ideally, I was also trying to emphasize that aspect to say the risk that we are facing is the level of our impatience that's coming around about state-owned companies where privatization comes in. But unfortunately, the risks of privatization are not talked about. And for me, that is very worrying point. And I think that it should be conceived that once we go that route, we are not going to move faster as we want. So, Chairperson, I think largely that's what the tipping point of our strategy. Maybe let me quickly then go back to the question in hand around SA Express. Also, I tried to illustrate it broadly that now it's us and the Department of Transport, meaning the Department of Public Enterprise and Department of Transport. They are a shareholder, they are a policy partner. Now, the regulatory arm, which is the Aviation Authority, is under the Department of Transport. Generally, what happens is that the Aviation Authority does audits, the safety audits that they do. And within the company also, there is a committee that looks at matters of safety. So there is a protocol that is generally followed, where at a certain point in time, they have to submit a certain set of information, based, of course, on the assessment by the audit, meaning the Aviation Authority audits. Now, what transpired here, I think 2 weeks before, they did not submit certain information, meaning that when the Aviation Authority needed certain information, the information was submitted, but according to them, it was not adequate. Now, and I think there was miscommunication between them in that sense, which then prompted the authority to immediately suspend the license. Of course, the company was taken up by surprise because they did not expect that the Aviation Authority will take such a drastic step, particularly grounding the entire airline. Normally, they do ground specific airplanes from time to time. They do that. It's just that it never gets right. But in this particular case, they grounded the entire airline. And I think that's what created the entire chaos. And what is said is that it was an abrupt decision. The decision was abrupt in the sense that the company did not even know it's going to happen, because the company would have made pre-arrangement to notify the client that this is going to happen, please, or maybe rearranging with other airliners, because there are other airliners. Now, What is said is that also the Department of Transport did, I'm not sure whether they were aware or they were not aware, but they did not communicate with us. Generally, in terms of how government works, because the Aviation Authority had the information with themselves, I think probably a week or two, generally they should sensitize the Department of Transport or ourselves so that we can intervene, because it is very abnormal for a situation like that to happen. But it happened. The entire Saturday we engaged them, but what is good is that they were on time to satisfy themselves by probably auditing all that. I don't have the elements of what I did check, because it's an operational matter known to themselves and the officials. But they satisfied themselves, and subsequent to that, their satisfaction, they then reinstated the operating license, which happened Sunday morning, evening, that's right. But then, all I can attest to is that Minister of Transport informed Minister of Public Enterprises when the decision has already been taken. And I then yesterday engaged with the Director General of Transport. I secured a meeting to meet him tomorrow at 11 o'clock. so that I address this pain area that happened, because of the fact that this is harming the company. You see, that what is worrying to me, to us lucky, is that we're working so hard to make these companies functional, to make them work. But decisions such as these ones that happens on the other arms of government create a situation where, first and foremost, it means the company has lost 2 days of revenue. Credibility, I don't even want to count the impact in money terms. Because a lot of people now worry about safety and all that. At the same time, I am also dealing with issues of because there are other airliners like Sam Air, such as Blue Crane, who are also now complaining down to the competition commission. So what is actually happening lately is that private companies definitely want these public companies out of the way. And I'm not so sure. I don't want to start saying things that I'm not sure of. But what I know is that it is not easy for the public companies at this particular point in time. More important to clarify, I wish people can understand how important it comes. Today we got black pilots. And these black pilots are trained by SAA Express. Normally SAA will never allow a new pilot to fly those big airlines before they can at least have a lot of air time, I'm not sure, 2,000 hours or so, on a smaller one. Also, it takes a lot of money to train and qualify a pilot. So, in a sense, I'm saying, private airliners normally, instead of investing on a pilot, we'd rather go and advertise and get someone's ready from other countries, because other countries have existed 200 years ago. And as a result, for them to generate, to build a pilot, more or less nothing, because they've got infrastructure in place. Other countries are forever in war. They've got over, I don't know how many, airplanes. So for them to invest in pilots, part and parcel of their core business. But we know that, of course, if you, and we don't talk about the economics, that for them to be able to sustain that type of economy, they have to get the resources from us for free. That's why you will have a mining sector that is like ours. Now, these are the dynamics of the economy, because I'm talking about companies that operate in an economy sector. I would highlight another angle also to emphasize the point. You know, Transnet only restructured 10 years ago. It became a company that is, yes, it became a company that is focused on the mining sector. Right now, commodity prices have gone down. It increased, Transnet is realizing losses. It means it has to go and find agriculture again on those branch lines that it has closed in the past. So in a literal sense, I'm saying the for us to talk about private orientation, it comes with certain dangers that are raised on time. And these companies are not like a company that can open in a mall tomorrow and close tomorrow. We want them to be there for a lifetime. So I think, Chairperson, broadly, that's just the picture that I needed to paint so that there's broader understanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think I really intensified the explanation and understand what do you do, what are you doing to the customers out there? Because I now understand and it's been to us a few years. But out there, like the other day when I traveled Monday on my way here to Cape Town, I heard two ladies having a discussion and not using this airline. It's the only airline flying from Cape Town, from doors to Cape Town. And one was saying, we can arrange the bus up, I will pick you up. Earlier we came, you know them, they did it. Since that day, this is a concern on this, what happened in the meeting. And surely you must do something out there to really explain to the customers that it was not about safety, what happened in the ground. The airline, it was because of certain regulations, it was not adhered And what I wanted to say is, I think we must, you as an oversight body, I don't know in which way we as the committee can play a role. It seems that we must know police people to play a role, they must do their work in the department. And I hope that you as the department will play a bigger role in making sure that those things must put in place. That they must adhere on time, the time frames about certain report is about getting. We as a committee only, struggling to get certain documents on time. And the honorable member is raising even at each and every committee meeting the frustration of getting these things. You can just imagine what make the transport department going that far to do that. Not saying it was right, but maybe there was. And then we would like to get that information. If you are fine, then we will get the information. What was the time frame? How long was the transport department waiting? When is this report supposed to be in? At what time? So that we can also play our role to make sure that it doesn't happen in the future. Then I'm going to allow the honorable members to ask questions on the report, but also for clarity of on the explanation of what happened during the week with the airline. I noticed honorable Robert Safi, honorable Sango. Any other name? Honorable Hai, honorable Julius, honorable Safi, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have questions all over. let me start. I would like to start off with the oversight role that the department is playing, and thank you very much for the very good explanation in the three different spheres of oversight that the department is doing. I wanted to refer you, although it's not part of the presentation, but it's part of the big book on page 142, where it's referred to. Sorry.
Yeah, the budget.
Yeah. On page 136, where they look at the department strengthening the outside functions. And I would like to know, in that explanation as was presented to the Select Committee last year, there was an underspending of that budget due to a delaying projects and that thing, and it's explained here. I would like to know what is the department doing at this stage, and then also in this oversight role that you do. I've got so many things here written down and I'm just the shareholding compact that's an administrative function, as you explained, and that you that gives the minister the method or the leverage to keep the board accountable. Last year the department reported us that you are thinking of some legislation on shareholder compact. There's nothing in this mentioned about that. What happened to that? Was it got a policy change or anything like that? Because this is also a department that's not been mandated or regulated by any legislation as it is. Not that it should be, but, you know, yeah. Then I also noticed that on page, that's my second question, on page, in the same book, on page 142, portfolio management and strategic partnerships, the objectives, and then you explain all the various types of companies that fall under the direct line of functioning of the department. But then you also, energy enterprises and manufacturing enterprises that have been part of the department or of these things previously, which is, I understand, Mrs. Dalziel, according to the three objectives, is to interact more and to try and align the strategic objectives of these. Does that mean that this department now, in this role of portfolio management and strategic partnerships, are engaging with all other 700, or not just all other enterprises that form part of the energy enterprise and the manufacturing enterprise? And then, if you do, is there a formal platform, or is it as the needs arise, and does it mean the needs arise from those enterprises, or from the department, or from both? Okay. So I'm making me nervous.
Can I just clarify on the question? Is the question talking to the ESCOM energy enterprises? Or broadly in the economy.
In this program portfolio management and strategic partnerships. Then it lists the program service objectives, energy enterprises, then discuss brought in on the other energy as the SSC, then manufacturing enterprises and it gives some objectives. Then it touched with the now electrical
okay, no, this is our program.
Under those programs, I get it that you engage with the enterprises in energy, that's not under your department, and you engage with enterprises in manufacturing, that doesn't directly fall under your department. That's my understanding of it. I need some clarity to understand it. If it is so, I would like to know what is the platform? Is it a formal platform? Is it informal? And what is the terms of engagement? Does it come from your side? Does it come from their side? Is it vice versa? What kind of thing? This is a program, but for us to understand in other side capacity, we need to understand what is the rules. How do we play this thing? This is more clarity for myself. Then I would like. Then I want to make a few comments and then ask questions. Clarities. You know, in the presidential review committee on the state-owned enterprises, that report that came out, although it's not part here, but yeah. There it was said that effective leadership is central to the process of directing or keeping SOEs on the right path in the right direction and keep them effective and valid. But also saying that co-funding or funding not only from government but from private investors is very important. The third thing that comes out there is that overlapping mandates needs to be addressed and rationalized. So I would like to know what is the science from the department, your role in getting out the overlapping mandates. And then the other thing is this whole thing, this your explanation of what happened or what's happening in China, which is very interesting. I know it's the time, but I think it's very interesting and very important for us to understand it. And share with you, sorry that I'm not only asking questions because it's difficult, I have to engage on this. As you explained, they keep their other subjects, their 900 state-owned companies as is because they go to rural areas where other companies don't go. But also, in a way, they're keeping the investment and the development of certain companies inside and through the private companies reach out to overseas markets, in particular. Now, what is difficult for me to understand in this oversight capacity is, if we only invest in ESCOM, where I understand the whole thing of manufacturing and distribution and that energy is key for us to become a country where we build our industries, and in the end to be able to export through which vehicle is the African government then going to export our energy if we get there, if we don't have a lot of companies that invested in energy in our country? Because that doesn't make sense to me. On top of the question of what we need to industrialize is water and energy, and we have a water problem. That's the third thing that I would like to understand, and maybe
Chair, through you, I understand that maybe this cannot be answered just like this, and that maybe should be a follow-up session between the department and ESCOM and the Senate committee. But if you can just give us the basic thing, I would appreciate. Then the last thing that I would like to address is that's very interesting, because you might be not aware of that, but this next committee also is part of the cluster within the Department of Environment Affairs Force, I think. And very often I do ask questions in the Department of Environment, who is responsible in the other departments to make sure that the various international agreements on environment and the various requirements on air pollution and on all these things are met by other departments. And very often we get the departments that are the department there to drive this, but other departments have to fulfill these things and they're not always playing the game. Now, to me, this question of the balance between the environment, the need of the country to grow the economy and to make sure that we all build a life for all of us that's better, and sustainability, where for instance you use the example, and I'm going to use your own example of the fumes and all these things. What is the model that this specific department, on state and enterprise specifically, on ESCOM, is using to keep the balance between this that I've mentioned, you know, environment, the shortage of energy, the health of people, to make sure that in 100 years these things are still there, and then, on the other hand, this is the one thing that we have to try, but then on the other hand, it links into my previous argument on private money, and specifically ESCOM and the role NASA is playing, the regulatory organization. Because I understand the need in this country for ESCOM and to drive to make sure that we have energy and that we build it. But at the same time, this country is signing a lot of agreements that comes around on clean energy and renewable energy. But there is no provision, or very limited provision, is being made by NASA for smaller companies, and I'm not talking about, I understand your argument for companies coming from overseas, but for companies within South Africa, for say for instance, operations of farms that can produce some energy less than 1 megawatt to be able to fit into the grid. Nothing like that exists in this country. While there is examples, good examples of those things in India, what role specifically does your department play in this on this whole thing? Because we have to balance these things, and there is a need that sometimes we have to take that economic growth has to take priority. But we can't grow now economically, and within 100 years, our children won't have a future. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much for your name. I think you asked all the questions we asked.
I understand you have to explain your job for them to be able to understand what the question is
I want to suggest what I mean. How about I will respond to this and then we take others?
No, you know the mistake.
Yes.
You will have ample time to time for questions and then honorable
thank you very much, honorable chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. I'll start with the SA Express. I'd like to comment. It's according to my opinion, it's a very sensitive issue. It's a security issue. It's a danger to the country. Where I believe, DJ, you said you are going to meet. They have arranged a meeting with the Director General of Transport. I feel that since I've said it's a security matter, because I suspect that there is sabotage, it's not a human error, this one. It's an economic sabotage. We know that maybe you didn't want, when you were trying to explain a number of things that are happening in the economy, to get into that security space where espionage becomes key. We know that our country is under attack, and so many fronts. I'll be up front and be direct about that. I think this matter needs to be taken to state security for fair investigation. Because we cannot have a situation where we'll always be caught with our pants down as a country, where individuals just do things as if there are no structural arrangement between departments, where before you act, you must contract. So that's my comment and my suggestion to you, that you shouldn't just go there by the body kind of meeting to say, what happened? Was it an oversight not to inform us? Or, you know, now let's investigate the matter to the core. Then my question on the African market. I heard a presenter talking about the opening of African market. I don't think because the minister mentioned that in her budget speech that there was no ground that says something should have been done before. She didn't just woke up and said we need to open or find a space in the African market. So my question will be, is there any plan or are there any engagements with the other countries, maybe from our region, the SADC region, that have started, I know that there are bilateral agreements and by the department, have you started opening the those rules, if one might say? The second one will be on the gatekeepers on the JSE. Nonsense.
what do you think the government should do to make sure that those gatekeepers are caught into order or are removed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable
Member. Thank you very much. I was excited to ask questions there when the EG was responding to your question. It took a very long time, so I was worried that if all of us ask questions, could have the whole day, and we must still go to the chamber too. Let me also start with the issue of SA Express, because I was also personally affected. I was flying from Durban to East London. We ended up meeting, and there was, I think, Solento, when I was within the regiment, it's called Solento, it's called the French, the regiment inside, and give you a pilot and the crew. Yeah, but when I arrived, I saw the official of AXA surrounded by passengers, it was almost busy, because my daughter couldn't come back on Sunday from Cape Town to Islam. What I want to find out also on the issue of the security, because unfortunately, for when I come to Cape Town or go back to Islam, I depend on SA Express, because there's no other airline except the Express that the parliament has an arrangement with. But I look at the state of the aircraft, get worried myself. I wanted to know what is the current time of the disposal of this aircraft, because when you look at some of them, they've been around for some time. Just looking at the state. But when I was at the airport and on Monday, there was a member from the National Assembly. She was coming to Kenya, but taking SAA to Johannesburg, Kenya, and asking why you're doing that. No, she said, I've long stopped using the SAA specifically for this incident of having it grounded. But I said, you mean that you use 40 tickets? He said, yeah. Sometimes I decide to go home to save the ticket because I can't take the risk of using SA Express. She narrated incidents where many times wheels would not come out. SA Express would crash land. So she has told us that she would rather sometimes not go home to save those tickets. So I note what the Honorable Lambo is saying, but also we should look at the state of the aircraft. I'm worried about the turnaround time of disposal. Coming to the report itself, firstly, I'd like to comment on the foreword of the minister. There's also the digital report. For me, I think it's very thin. In terms of details, for me, this is where you even before you go to the indicators and strategic objectives, strategic goals, you must get the meat from the forward of the minister and the report of the. For example, there are a lot of achievements, from these SOCs that could be better explained in the forward of the minister and the report of the DG. The build program, the transformation, like in the studies, details of those, the capital projects, must get those in this the forward or the DG. The issue that you have been talking about, the training of the pilots, those must come out in those two sections. But also challenges should come out in those two sections. But I was also listening, though I also read the document, particularly the strategic context some departments call it disciplination analysis for 3 years, because there's strategy there, the context. You know, when you listen to it, I was writing something to my friend next to me, the context sounds like a context made by the Department of Economic Development. It's very broad, it's not specific to the department itself. And my worry is that how is then the department going to address the issue that it is raising in this strategic context when it is really not responsible, not a responsible government, I mean department, to address the situational analysis or the strategic strategic context. For example, you're talking about the limited participation of large part of society, which limits the vicious cycle of a state group. This is in your strategic context. And therefore, in your strategic goals and strategic objectives, how are you going to address that issue? Perhaps others you quote the infrastructure network that is yet to quote is not support regional integration and inter transition. In your strategic goals and strategic objectives, how are you going to, for me it's an issue that I'm raising with the departments, even though that come up with situational analysis. It's no use to have the situational analysis. But then in your strategic goals and strategic objectives, you say nothing. It's just a general statement. You don't have you don't have a way forward in terms of addressing what you've written in the institutional analysis. So there's quite a lot of them, in your strategic context that I don't know how they're going to be addressed in the strategic plan or annual performance plan, so that we're able to measure achievement on what you've raised in the institutional analysis or strategic context. The last issue that I just wanted to research has been there. Also, the judgment also knows very well the issue of the concentration of economy in certain provinces, particularly out there. But I don't know if that situation is then addressed in the annual performance plan. I know you're talking about the possibility of having, I don't know, a harbor in Port Nolok. Did you say harbor or something? Yes, Port Nolok. But I don't know what other areas, for example, there, during our day, you have these branches functioning, particularly in small towns. Government has a program of revitalizing small towns. Raised this last year in 2014, whether we meet with Transnet or we meet with the Department of Public Enterprise. I continue to raise it until 2019 because it hasn't happened. This revitalization of small towns, because there are a lot of plans lines that have been closed. I'll focus, because I've been doing that over the years, focusing on my province. People saying that you have in the province of the Eastern Cape two main towns, East London and Port Elizabeth. But there's no line that is connecting the two towns. So manufacturing between the two towns depends on the private sector, from the goods from this town, from Port Elizabeth to East London or East London to Port Elizabeth, depends on the private sector to get to this. Because there's no line. There is a line, but it was closed. It's not functional. It's not operational. But also in other small towns, branches have long been closed. And every time there's a promise that that is going to be considered. But as I'm saying, I shall raise that until I leave the parliament. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Hello, let's appreciate the opportunity and the presentation from the department. There are a few points that I want to engage on. I also appreciate appreciate the context in which you articulate the issues of the economy, because we can never only credit your tools, but everything hinges on our performance on the economy. And the economy that we all need to understand, or we ought to understand, that it must be secured. I want to raise a controversial issue which I believe is informed by a fervent understanding that you as officials at the administrative level, you are more influential on policy matters than we do as politicians. I'm not a politician or political activist, but just politicians. Now, the issue of the situation of the economy is supposed to be the kernel of our consciousness as members operating at administrative level and at political level. I know it was not part of your brief today, but last year when we visited ESCOM, you call it Middle Bay Station, the supplier of coal to Middle Bay, to my now understanding, as we are informed, is a private company. Now, and yet we are told that Midupi is the fourth largest coal-fired power station. Being a member of the organization and being a member of parliament, for me, it's a very difficult situation to have Midupi as the fourth largest in the world and being supplied coal by a private company. This point I raised it in a different organization which I belong to at the highest level, that's a very dangerous position which in the near future it must be reviewed and be revisited. The second issue that I'm passionate about, which I also raised on several occasions, you might have a divergent point of view, but we cannot confidently say our public or state-owned entities, I prefer to call them that way, state-owned entities, their performance are at level as we expect them to be. I'm raising this point in a context and informed by what you have articulated to us, that the importance and the critical role that's supposed to be played by state-owned entities in terms of driving the economy and having a maximum impact on the life and standards of our people on the ground is very much fundamental and important. But the question will continuously be, how do we chip in and intervene where there's lumbering performance of certain state-owned entities? Your report of presentation slides, when you call of, you talk of strategic outcomes, the first bullet says SOCs are entirely capable of handling their own operations without requiring state intervention. And that's a very much important point. But is this, or does this represent the current reality? I think that's the point that I want to raise. The third point, Chair, is on this place, I'm not number. This one. What has changed? What has changed? Look. In the context of the confidence, the trust on our state institutions, you are saying on the slide, active engagement with society to make SOCs and department more accountable to the government as part of creating that committee. Now, when you talk to us as the same committee, we'll be more comfortable to give specifics, to say, you zoom, you dive into the assets. We welcome the overall context, but we want you to zoom in, because linked to this, I will say, look, this is a very fundamental point, which I will be interested to understand the how part of it. And there's a question that I will pose. Jonathan, two last questions. No. The issue of policy concept paper. I assume that you are familiar with it, right? Can follow up on that. It's an administrative issue, but it has been on paper every time when you come to us, the department comes to us, we talk about this. I think it must be off the table. The shareholder policy concept paper. This issue has been forever on your presentation. Implementation of the interventions to strengthen financial positions of SOC. I want you, in response, to link this point to the first point that I raised on funding their own operations without requiring the state intervention. Connect the two, so that you bring clarity in my mind as a member of this particular committee. Two last questions. Two last questions. On what program is this? Program 3. Under program 3. The performance indicators are being reduced from 7 to 2 for 2015-2016. Can you explain that to us? What's that?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Okay. I note you, Honourable Member, but it's first Honourable Julius Malema.
You wish from the military guns. Chairperson, just to start, you talk about the interventions within the segment, the strategic outcomes. To resolve coal capacity challenges within Transnet and Transnet. Can you just elaborate on that? I don't see how it is done and what's the real problem. Because sometimes we look at something else, try to resolve something else in our efforts to better these state enterprises. Also on Transnet, I agree with the DG that we need to revitalize those energy lines or reopen them. The ones that we use, the rail lines, especially for agriculture and manufacturing. It's real crucial. But you mentioned it, but I didn't hear it from this presentation. And you said, we know it's there, we know it will help the economy, especially for manufacturing, that is mentioned. But we don't see the tangible actions that the department will take to say that this is what we're going to do to meet these challenges or targets that we are setting. In other words, I don't see, as per the regulations from National Treasury, the measurable outcomes. I don't see measurable outcomes from this. I see other stuff, interventions that will be taken and so forth. But you know, for me, it's not as if next year we can hold you accountable. Because there's no measurable outcomes. It should be, in my view, tangible. You also presented a revised strategic plan. But to do that, you need to, there's a set of criteria that you need to follow
or comply with, and that is a policy change or another direction that you're taking and so forth. What were the reasons for changing or revising your strat plan in March this year? I'm covered with three of those ones. And then, sorry, Jefferson, sorry. SONA and the budget presented by the finance minister, we must always align our programs with that. Specifically on SA Express, SAA, that merger that was mentioned, nothing is planned for it for 5 years, and it's mentioned now. There's no talk of anything, no plans that I heard of. There might be something, and I need just clarity on that. Also, the closing down of state-owned companies that are a liability to the state. It was also mentioned. And nothing, we heard nothing about that. The Nel Asia. It has financial implications. It has strategic planning implications. It might have political implications, growth implications. I'm not looking at the negative side of it only. But last time the Nel came in, they said, we are meeting today with the minister and we'll give you feedback. Up to now, Chairperson, we didn't receive a word from the Nel on that. And I think it's a high profile matter. And the department should know about it. You should have an answer because you are overseeing it. You are overseeing the Nel. You must have an answer for us to say that the Nel didn't do the writing or they did the writing. They met with the minister. This was the outcome because they should have reported. And if they didn't report, why didn't they report? Did you act on that as the Department of Public Enterprises? Did you act on the Nel's? I don't know whether they gave you, so I don't want to speculate or chase you into an answer, you know, give you a powerful answer. I will leave it open to you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Over to you, Honourable
Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I've got only 15 questions. Okay. Oh, you added 2 minutes, so 15. Okay. Let me just reduce them to that. Maybe look at the mitigation of the effect of the climate change. I want to check whether there is any commitment from the developed countries from COP21 in terms of giving the financial support to the developing countries in this process of reducing the greenhouse gas, particularly we as the South Africans. Our energy supply is more dependent on the coal, of course, which is the highest emitter of carbon dioxide. This has got some historical implications, where the energy was the monopoly of the few. But under this new dispensation, even the informal settlement says the rural areas do have access to electricity. So the question is, is there any support because I hope there was a commitment during the COP21, which Chairperson, you are party to that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Juliet is not here now. I just want to respond on, because I can expect the DG to answer on the commitment of the report on the mail. It's on the program of the committee in the first quarter. So we said we will call them in and we will call them to come further. Thank you. But when it comes in, I can just jump back to you. You can respond to the question, DG. Please, I think I am also covered by all the questions. I raised my, but I will in my comments refer to some, because not the question, it's just a general comment. Over to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson.
You know the time is now 10 to 12. You have time, it's quarter to 1.
I'll
keep it short, maybe it will be.
I'll keep it short. I'll respond straight to the point. Well, Chairperson, I think, let me start with question number one. In terms of SH Press, I'll try to round up all those questions around SH Press. First, let me say the issue of credibility is very worrying to us. Maybe let me also share some sensitive information. I think sometimes it's better to give the committee the answer, because we're not only here to come and account, but also to seek counsel and also to share with you the challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis. The CEO phoned me, I think, last night and this morning, CEO of SH Express, and the dynamic he's facing is that he's saying his officials are cleaning the door, so he wants to come again and do an audit. It seems they are getting pressure from somewhere, where more or less, according to that particular pressure, they shouldn't have reissued their license. So it's very worrying, even to the CEO, because you see, when you operate in an environment like that, it's also very problematic. So hastily, I am going to re-engage the department internally, because, like I said, there's so much pressure on the companies at this point in time. And maybe let me also illustrate the point that these companies have wanted to be recapitalized several years back. And they have been denied an opportunity. I think in early in the year, Komso, when they wanted 6 or 9 planes, the application, because at the moment they use leases. And that, I should say, to a greater extent, you can blame the company, but also you cannot blame the company, because any company for it to run, there are times when the EP or the shareholder have to inject capital so that the company can be able to revive. Constantly, when in a competitive environment, and it's another issue that I want to also highlight, as they express more often than not, they open new routes. And when you open a new route, you might have incurred losses for 6 months. Because you are not breaking even. The customers are not used to the plane going in that area. You have to invest a lot in marketing and all that. But once the route is viable, the Department of Transport opens it up for competition. When they have not recovered their own money. You see that I'm saying that there are those dynamics that are there that we must accept and face. That SA Express took a bullet themselves to go to routes that naturally were not flight routes. Rural towns and all that, connecting them to the cities. They incurred those costs. And it's a reality in a business environment. Right now, all those routes are open to competition. And normally when people come into a new route, they would actually come up with a price half. I know a flight from Bloemfontein. Sam Air came there and Blue Crate and they half the price. And you see Sam Air flight running with 4 people.
how are they really making the money? Just those type of things that you realize that actually an adventure just for a period of time to get the express offering, and then you see from then onwards it will go back to. But those are the realities of business. If we want them to operate like businesses, we must understand they are facing challenges out there. So our lack of recapitalization of those companies also to a greater extent. Of course, I cannot also run away from the fact that there were cases where you find that the management was not to the level. But from time to time, the shareholder took decisions to change the board, to change the CEOs. The SIC does that and with Eskom. Right now, nobody talks about Eskom performing. But we can see, it's performing very well. The financials are improving. In fact, we will probably maybe issue proper reports. That begins to demonstrate, because maybe we don't also talk much about our successes. So that part of recapitalization, I think I'm trying to answer that question. I need to also indicate that we will, of course, submit a special report on this incident assessment. We will just consult with all the affected parties so that we also gain better knowledge of what transpired. At the moment, I am telling you only what has been reported to me. So it's proper that we also do our own work and investigation, hoping that there is no other activity going on that will count them tomorrow. I'm just emphasizing you of this dynamic that are there. Now let me move through to the questions around the shareholder compact, the legislation. Okay, let me talk about the legislation that was I think appearing in 2 years in the strategic plan. You are aware that the Minister of Treasury talked about, the Minister of Finance talked about the reform of state-owned companies. That reform is informed by this very legislation. But right now, what we have on our table is a concept paper. That document, it is still a classified document. I'm saying it is not open for circulation, even with the minister. What it does, it is looking at possibilities of how we can restructure the totality of the state-owned companies, 700 plus state-owned companies, through a process of rationalization, through the process of... There's those that are called Schedule 2 companies. I think they are, what's the number? How many are there? 21. Those that are commercial oriented, like Petro SA, Sandral, Eskom, you name them, those ones. So that document is looking at how best they can be managed going forward. It assumes certain options that are still a matter of government digestion. So I think the delay in as far as the legislation is because, Chairperson, that legislation will be informed by this process. Right now there is an interministerial committee that is chaired by the Deputy President that is overseeing this process. So the department then could not run ahead of itself, because we are focusing on a legislation only for those that are in our stable. But when the process started, we had to then stop that process because now there is a new all-encompassing exercise that is going to be government-wide, looking at them in totality. I think maybe in our battle report, we should have outrightly expressed that in our report. So I think I just wanted to put clarity. I hope you will remember that put this matter. Let me go to the question that talks energy enterprises. Here we are talking about the energy, the transport, is the programs in our state. So we have 6 state-owned companies in our state, which is one is in Nel, Sakol that deals with timber, Alexco that deals with mining. We have put them under a branch that is called manufacturing enterprises. So that's why in the document you see manufacturing enterprises. So under manufacturing enterprises, we have Genel because they are manufacturing. We have Alice because they are manufacturing. We've got also Safco, the one that is with Tim.
under energy is Eskom and Eskom and other enterprises which are subsidiaries of Eskom. And then under transport we have got Transnet and SA Express. The Rush SA is going into a deal with us. So I think that's the clarity under the big two. And the question you asked was that we interact with the stakeholders. I think first and foremost, let me outline this one. We don't want to do the work of the policy department. A policy department being the Department of Transport, it is the one that deals with matters of stakeholders because the policy matters and the regulation matters. Our interest is to manage our state-owned companies and make sure that they are profitable. So we are focused on ensuring that the interest of Eskom. I think that's the part that sometimes we fall into. When we are here to safeguard the interest of Eskom, even when we engage everywhere, because Eskom we see it as a company, and we are the shareholders of that company. Now, when it is energy, the Department of Energy will then look at IPP and everyone else, probably which is the broader sector view of the energy sector. So when we engage with them, we differ sometimes because we are looking at Eskom as our company. So whenever there is a policy direction they take, which is going to be acting opposite or negative to Eskom, we are bound to differ with them as the shareholders. So I think that dimension needs to be clarified. And I hope by putting it this way, it could certainly matter to rest also. Now the question was that if in terms of export of electricity, what then happens? Under what vehicle? No, I think that's why I'm saying I've put up that as a foundation, that Eskom is a company, and it trades like any other company. And we want to see it profitable. And for it to be profitable, it should be able to trade. At a moment, of course, I don't have the figures on my hand, but I think Makola can give you the exact figures as to how much they have traded so far in terms of selling electricity. But they also buy in times of need. So I think that dynamic also needs to be balanced. Now the core funding issues of private investors, I think the independent power producer comes in as a handy example. That there was, maybe let me broaden this thing this way, so the discussion is free, to answer also the question. I always look at Eskom from three angles, which is now the mining side, the supply of coal, the generation aspect, which is the power station and their generation, and the distribution, which is the sale of electricity. Now, these three arms are key. Now, when you talk about participation of private players, it's an issue of saying where exactly in this entire value chain are we talking about. Already, Eskom supply is private players, which at the 150 billion revenue, 45 billion goes to them. So automatically, the private players take a bigger chunk already. Now, at the generation part, you would realize that there's a lot of outsourcing that happens. So there's also a greater aspect of private player, same with the distribution. So sometimes I'm saying when you're talking about PSP, private sector participation, we sometimes forget that tenders are private sector. It's private sector, but it's patent are there. Literally when you look at Eskom, you would realize that probably 80%, if not more, if you had to discount the salary, you would realize that it's private sector participation. So if we want more and more of it, it means we want to move into the space of generation, which goes to what you've talked about, the security of the country. That now, energy being a very important commodity or a backbone of the economy, if you are taking away generation, of course, IPP are there. They generate and they sell into the school. But at what price? What normally is not told is that actually, at the moment, maybe in the future it's a different story. At the moment, ICPs are very expensive. Remember, when you talk about economies of scale, why do people come big? Because of the bigger power station, you tend to reduce your cost of electricity generation. Now, an ITD, and I think Akola can explain this part better, that you from time to time have to make a choice in terms of your supply options. But now the IPPs are self-allocating, because the sun, if you don't use it by 6 o'clock, it's gone. But the length of the matter is, it's not a cheaper option to go. Now, if we're saying Eskom should be efficient, but we lock it in contract that says you must use renewable energy, yet renewables are expensive, that's exactly how we say. You know, it is this kind of discussion is never in the public environment. It's only closed-session discussion that we interact. So on a balance of discussions, when we engage on this matter, we must reach that point. So this is what we did when we engaged the Department of Energy. Because at the moment, as a shareholder, we want Eskom to be sustainable. That's why we had that line to say we want these companies not in the future to depend on government grants. But if we continue to burden them and by using pressure, what I normally call public pressure, through newspapers and dialogues on television and all that. And unfortunately, those people, those dialogues, you can't take those people to court because everyone has a right of opinion. But us, we can mislead you. We are bound to give you what is particularly correct. So I think such is a discussion that we would want to advance going forward so that these matters are very clear. So I think there, I'm trying to address that issue of co-funding private investment. You say, the environment under which we operate, we have given certain things a chance, such as IPPs and all that. But new information, when you get into operation, you begin to realize that they are not as good the options as sometimes they are counted to be. And let me cite another operational shortcut. 6 o'clock, when the sun is gone, it takes about 12 hours to start power machine. So it means that even if you are using the sun, you still have to have your power station running. So that 6 o'clock, so that you carry dual cost parallel as you go. So I'm saying, unless in the future you've got a technology that can select your energy from the sun so that you can even use it in the evening. So those are the dynamics. I'm saying, at the moment, unless when we look forward in the future, we see a different pitch. But nonetheless, the role and the importance of private sector cannot be underestimated on areas, or let me say, on specialized areas. For us to be able to build a power station, we need experts to come from other countries that have done it before. It's inevitable. And unfortunately, they don't come cheap. That's why the cost of build programs are so high. Locally, we are not invested enough in our universities, in our research capacity, to be able to have this thing on our own. But the advantage in investing in such entities that we have is that Africa is the future. We have a choice to leave it for other countries to enter into it, or to use South Africa to become a player. But nonetheless, that's a policy decision. Now the Chinese model, that there was a question around the Chinese model. The Chinese model, and I would quote to the chairperson of SASEX. He said they will always support and keep their state-owned companies big as they are, because they, by that, they have the capacity to go to areas where private sector cannot go. Whether we like it or not, private sector is profit-oriented. Private sector would not put its money in an area where the return can only happen after 10 years. But government can. And it's the role of government to do that. So that's the Chinese. And unfortunately, the Chinese state-owned companies are trading outside China. There are a couple of agreements that Transnet has with Chinese state-owned companies.
they are trading. So we need to make sure that ours are also able to trade in Africa, like Transnet is doing. Transnet is already moved into partnerships with other countries to supply them with locals like Botswana and many other examples. I think with Habas also, there are options on the table in terms of exporting such assets. So that's the future actually we need to see. So the issue of keeping the balance between the economy and environment, I think that one is unavoidable. But the reality of the matter is, I think when you were following the COP discussions, you would realize that there were cases where big countries refused China, only because of the cost of the environmental compliance to their economy. So as an emerging economy, I think we must also look at that. But now let me give another paradigm. The minute you make a commitment that is worth $200 billion to a company like Eskom, normally what happens here is that it means you are introducing a new industry at the cost of another one. I'm saying in plain language. Because whoever is going to be supplying the technology and everything else is going to benefit out of it. And chances are they might actually be the only one. So the dynamics that are there also need to be properly analyzed and understood. That we need not use at the backdrop of ESCOM introduction of other industries. So it should be properly known. But nonetheless, it's a discussion that happens in the environment and all that. But like I say, our interest is to make sure that ESCOM operates as a company, possibly sustainable for the future. And I think the issues of corporate sabotage, those are the realities of security. We acknowledge and we sensitize the CEs and the boards to make sure that I think one other illustrative example with ESCOM, largely on the maintenance, is that they focus on that area of ensuring that the checks and balances are in place. There are people full-time who are checking to ensure that the maintenance process is adhered to the dot. And we have seen the change that happened, which might also illustrate that there were problems in those areas. So again, it is very, very important for us to focus on it. I've already talked about African markets, that there are agreements in place in many African countries. And I think I've also at large explained the issue of what put at the expressway is the delay in recapitalization. But I need to also indicate that because DNF has got an arm that deals with aeroplanes, aeronautical engineering, we have engaged DNF to assist at the express. They have already put a proposal on the table. I think they might be digesting it this week. SA Express is amenable to it, so that SA Express hands over completely the maintenance business for Genel Fleet in their behalf. Then they will simply focus on the maintenance of the business, the marketing, the management, to make sure that their planes are on time and all that. So those are the strategic changes that we have done in supporting them, so that the state-owned companies also support one another under the current environment. The question around the branch lines, I've broadly alluded to it by saying that the over-concentration of the business to support the mining sector came with its own challenges. That's why in the strategic environment, we have put up those broad economic challenges. Because maybe I should highlight this one. Minister of Economic Development did highlight that this state-owned companies or the expenditure of government through state-owned companies have suggested South Africa to survive the economic meltdown. Because the amount of money spent by the state-owned companies has got that particular effect in the economy. Particularly Transnet and Eskom, they are very key levers of government. Now, of course, at the time, it was relevant then to focus on the mining sector because of the revenues that were generated. But right now, Eskom needs new or five opportunities. That's when the branch lines only is the viable. I have to advance that. That's what I'm saying. Only is the viable. That's an important word. Because again, when you open up a branch line, it should sustain itself in revenue terms. So the activation of the manufacturing sector along the small towns, including the agricultural sector, it is key. Because you can't just bring in a trade and the trade does not have freight to carry. So there has to be an opportunity for freight generation. So these things go together. That's why we're talking about industrial development to support. But it's important for us to see the readiness on the part of Transnet to move and open branch lines whenever there's a freight opportunity, so that investors can have that knowledge at hand. That if I go and open up a factory in Fulduskuro, definitely there will be a cargo line that will pass by. I think that's a matter of interest. So Transnet is ready to that level. But whenever there is a freight opportunity for the branch line to be opened, they will definitely avail a local to pass by. The good thing is that they will capitalize themselves. Transnet engineering, I guess, with its performance, their engineering capability, and they are actually now recognized as a regional manufacturer in South Africa, or in Africa, let me put it that way. So I think those are some of the good things that we want to keep on reporting on as we come to the committee. Well, the issue of state-owned company performance, it's an issue that is important to us. What is interesting is that we've got 700 plus state-owned companies. In our stable, it's only six. And that person, sometimes we have to carry the burden of the rest, even if they are not under our area of responsibility and accountability. So I think sometimes when we are here or when such matters are written, they are written broadly. But what is important for us, what we have learned, is the importance of management. Look, Eskom stands around by management. And Transnet was solid because of the solid management. And as a shareholder, we are emphasizing that as a principle to say we are going to focus on ensuring that the members of the board, the chief executives of these companies, are quite capable. What is said around that discussion is when sometimes it seems to be taking an inference that the managers that are there are incapable because of the fact that they are playing. That has been a narrative, and I think it's very sad. Sometimes you find that it becomes very special on qualifications, but you have another one with a metric, is a CEO, and nobody says anything. It's a very sad story, but nonetheless, it's an environment we're operating under, and we have to adjust and continue and motivate them, Chairperson, because if we do not motivate them, they are also human. Every time they read a paper, there's just stories that say they are negative. So we play ministers from time to time has to meet with them and motivate them to understand that whatever effort they do is highly appreciated. Because the job they do, like I've highlighted, it can be easy for them to operate like any other private company. Instead of generating pilots in-house, giving young people a chance and opportunity, they can easily just go to the market also and get pilots and save costs and become efficient as they should be by other standards. But they still have to adhere to a developmental mandate of ensuring that a certain portion of their revenue is dedicated towards development. And that part, we tend to forget it when we talk in the word performance. But we will try to find measures that can then bring in a balancing act in the area. when we were talking about public consultation, we were talking about our engagement with provinces and municipalities, because we tend to realize that, like I cited an example with Transnet, for Transnet to get fried, to be active in the revival of the small towns, the municipalities need to identify industrial parks in their areas. And where possible, we then have to use the capacity of state-owned companies to help them plan, because we know they don't have good planning capacity. For them to have investment booklet that can then be taken out to lure investors into their own area. So we play that role also through that interaction. And also what is not reported more, but it was there in the budget vote of the minister, that under the current setting, Transnet is actually currently subsidizing the private sector by doing concessions in terms of the rate, because they are aware that these are our reliable customers. At the moment, we are going through a difficult time, so we have to reduce the rate to accommodate them so that they are also able to sustain this commodity. So I think those are the dynamics. Much as it's a revenue loss on their part, in a state-owned company, they understand that if they don't play that role, it will affect the economy broadly and massively. I think let me rush through to other final questions, because I have more or less covered most of these questions around the targets and all that. The denial issue you've covered in your person.
And I was saying the question around the reporting of the mail is on our program for the next and he was saying we are going to call him in to report. When they come to on our search, they will come. And he has a brief, because there's other developments also that took place afterwards, but he was saying they must come and report, then we can interact with the report, not send in the report, we must interact and then we can ask the relevant questions on the report. That's what he was agreeing with us on the report. Thank you.
With your indulgence, I'm referring to the Leon here. On that, department should do something. I don't think it's necessary for us to wait until, I think we might have to wait until September, because we know the recess period. Just an indication of what happened or what transpired, because it's critical for planning, and we might engage them. Thank you, Chair.
I think on that I can give this perspective to the person, that
keep in mind the time is running out. You must not go deep
into it. Yes. This has two like issues, Chairperson. I think on the general Asia, let me outline this way, broadly, to say this is not an anomaly. Actually, the NEL has been having partners in many other of its subsidiaries. In fact, that actually happened several years back on advice, after there were instances where Dinel was using agents to secure, because you know the arms industry is a very secluded industry. The trade in arms is controlled by many regulations, and on top of that, it's more also on relationships. More than any other thing. So it used to use agents and it bent its fingers in the past, which more or less there was even some losses of money that were incurred. And based on advice was that it should rather go through strategic partnerships, where it partners with other companies that are, that, where there's a complementary benefit in terms, because remember, there are a manufacturing arm. So when you manufacture, you want to sell at the end of the day. So I think the Dinel Asia arrangement with Dinel was purely on the basis of the marketing side. But I need to emphasize, it was not an anomaly. There are about four or so arrangements that are already in place. But in terms of the PSMA application issues, those are more of administrative mishaps that are still under management, which will be tackled that time, Chairperson. that time of the report. So I think I needed to put up that particular challenge on the net. And on the environment, I think I've gone to explain it broadly. I hope that covers the manner in which the question was asked. Around the target, we have, of course, introduced a few new things. That's the issue around the intergovernmental relations where we are engaged currently with the provincial and municipal government to make sure that we broaden the scope of our state-owned company. We are putting greater emphasis also on international cooperation to open up markets for our state-owned companies in Africa, largely. And also to, like I've talked about, broadening skill development. Because we want to make sure that certain things don't repeat itself. Remember the Midupi situation where the community were up in arms. We also make sure that as a department, we go ahead of time to create an enabling environment as and when there is a new cartel program that comes on site. Even now with the issue, because they have to leave, we also actively support them to make sure that when they leave, some of the people who've been dependent and working there, because their jobs are coming to an end, there is more or less a new shift so that those skills are redirected somewhere in the economy. So those are the new elements that we are bringing in. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DJ. I have questions, but I think I'm not going to ask. If you can show maybe interesting one is recommendations of the recent review committee. If you maybe can give us in writing what it is, and then the you can answer it officially, the merger of between SAA and SAA Express. I'm going to allow you when you're going to do your closing and just to refer to the project.
Just one for you, sample for you, DJ. I was interested to have that empirical information on the impact of our state enterprises, because I'm an exponent of this issue in terms of the deeper assessment and analysis to see how do we impact, because there's a lot of resource that is being deployed on state enterprises, and we have a responsibility time to time to evaluate and have an analysis to see, since we're saying they have managed to caution us economically against the depression, but continuous evaluation and assessment. I think that information could help us if we can have that information. It will be a source to us.
Thank you, Honorable Julie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just clarity on one issue. I don't know, was it referred to my question as a narrative of when black people and leadership is always regarded as SS. I don't think that was the intention, and really, if we ask or answer questions in a political manner, our platforms should do it. I need to remind the department, you are not politicians. But my question refers for clarity.
I think we have to defend this official, because it's a common knowledge that every time in the media, public media, we don't own the media. Chairperson owns the media. And every negativity that appears on the media, it plays the picture that you fail ESCOM because ESCOM is, the head of ESCOM is black. It's a common knowledge. It does not attend to a member who has it is a perspective that's there in public.
Honorable member, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Can I just say something before we proceed, honorable member, please? We had a discussion at DG where you also refer to the same thing, and it was not even opposition was present. So it was like honorable member was saying the perception in the media, I'm not coming up for him, but we had a discussion before on the SA Express thing. So he refers also to that thing of the perception. So he can speak on that, but I must really say I don't think it was because he mentioned it, even in that meeting that we had yesterday. Our Honorable Lapskami, you can recall I went up for that meeting early yesterday morning. I explained myself that was the meeting that I'm talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I was referring to was, I don't think the reason why I raised it, I don't think my question was answered. I need to remind you that I'm also black. And I take really exception to the fact that it you know, it goes around that way. As a committee, I'm sitting as a committee, not as a member of the opposition or something. That there are core capacity challenges, particularly within Transnet and Eskom, from your document. And I wanted to know, what are these capacities? Are you addressing it? That was my challenge. I'm not referring to any media reports or what. I don't know the narrative of that. I don't ascribe to that narrative.
Okay.
Or any of such. But Chairperson, if it's not possible to tell us now, can we get a complete presentation that can be sent us in written form on the what you mean by the capacity challenges, particularly within transport, and this can be good to us.
I think we can do it like this. Because it might be that it is more than one aspect, because it is like very technical things. I can recall when we had that oversight meeting that they were referring to. Honorable Sapak, you also want to put up your hand, you want to say something?
I think one of those 15 questions will also come in. Like, you remember that I was just checking whether it's any financial support. Was there any commitment for the developed country? Because if we look at the developing countries, and serious damage was done by these highly industrialized countries.
So I'm going to
Well, Chair, I think let me take the last one first. What is interesting about this word support is that it never told that actually it is loans. So I think we might understand it from the context. So that's generally a dynamic. It's not free money. So there is, but it comes in that form. And the issue of the review committee is that one who was sent, Chairperson, I think it's not on the phone. The measure around SA Express and SAA, that one is handled by the Interministerial Committee headed by the Deputy President, so it's an ongoing matter.
So you are going to keep
us in the on the capacity challenges, when we were talking about the market demand strategy in Eskom, current Transnet, it's more actually talking about the capacity in terms of skills, the capacity to finish off projects on time. So generally, that's the area. But I think this one so far, as if we give reports in terms of those utilities, we simply acknowledge the delay in terms of certain capital projects. We could do it in time because of the capacity challenge. So where in other instances you have to train people first and those type of things. But I think, Chairperson, I need not run away from that other issue that I was highlighting broadly, to say sometimes in the media you would realize that someone has a qualification, there will be so much more or no qualification. But others, when they are in a similar situation, there is no noise at all. And I'm saying, it is an environment under which we operate, and we must accept it. And I don't think that I was trying to insinuate anything, because I'm not talking something that I'm creating in my head. In fact, that are there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gigi. We all understand that
like I was saying, and I'm not going to say, even with our first president, they objected about me when he became the president of the country. Listen, and afterwards, it was a yellow piece. I just want to compliment you on the presentation, and especially on your emphasis, your oversight role on economic transformation. Because what we notice when both entities is in front of me, we normally ask the question, because we in the Western thing, I'm from the Western thing, and so can all other members refer to their provinces. We cannot see. So we really want you to think. The other day I was saying, and I don't think anyone was objecting, I am from the Western thing, and I'm an MC. Not referring badly. There is people in the Western Cape, and like the Honourable Minister of yesterday there was a debate. In the NCOP. The Minister was saying Western Cape is far South Africa. It's not an island of South Africa. And that people is also living in Western Cape. But we really don't see all those nice words, transformation, localization, in those. If I can talk about Oswin, one place that I'm coming from. Localization, I mean, in your dreams it will never happen. Do you understand? And we can talk about this because all the businesses owned by white people, and not negative, honorable member against you, but the transformation part, when will it happen in those areas? And how are we going to do it? The people are becoming upset because they cannot see those things. We cannot see them.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Can I really mention something? I don't know why this went in that direction. Because I explained myself why I take exception to the narrative, because my question wasn't directed at it. My question wasn't directed. Now we are in Oxford. I can go to anywhere.
In my closing remarks, I wrote it here. Because the reality is, it's not a political thing.
It's about transformation.
It's about transformation. Why? And it's not on your side, because you are not delivering. It's about the health. I think you are the one who wants to make politics out there. We must see the things. Where is it? Where is the nearest transformation agenda in Oxford or in the Western Cape? I'm asking them. So thank you very much. Sometimes we must just understand and listen, because I'm not talking for me or for ANC or for GA. I'm talking about the transformation agenda. And also remember, if you don't agree with me on transformation, then I don't know, but we can talk. But I'm just saying thank you
very
much. No, it's not the narrative, it's about the reality. Because all of us is screaming every time in which province is the problem. Where is the problem that you are talking about? I don't see it yet.
Is the whole country transformed?
No, I think you are not.
Go to Alex and see what is happening. Under ANC control. Why do you say in Western Cape in West? The whole country is not transformed. That all is best also because I call
it. Yes, on a point of order.
Yes,
on a point of order.
And I allow you to remember, when I was talking about the you said you were in agreement. Because it's not about the GA level in the Western Cape. It's not about the honorable member Ramaswamy agreed with me when I said we don't see it yet. So I don't know what was your angle, why you're making it. But on that note, I'm going to allow the DG to do his closing remarks. Want to say something?
Final
remark,
not close.
A final.
Yeah, thank you. Chairperson, I take this opportunity to thank you very much and all the honorable members for the questions and the insightful engagement, which actually
in my mind and the minds of the officials, when we go back, we know this type of accountability, it keeps us on our toes, and we are hoping that when we come next time around, we'll be probably reporting progress. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And next time, please inform us on the provincial programs in Wales so that we can see and understand, because we are presenting provinces. Thank you very much. For your time, they can speak also. I don't know for this. The meeting is adjourned, but before we are going to adjourn the meeting, so we can go to the meeting.